Hi, I'm Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa, and you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org.
Edward Baer, founder of the magazine The Art of Eating, calls his new book, 50 Foods, The Essentials of Good Taste, a guide to deliciousness. In it, he advises the home cook how to choose the best meat, seafood, cheese, bread, fruits, and vegetables, how to prepare them, and which foods and wines complement them. It's published by Penguin, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Baer back to our show today. Welcome back. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, and I'm happy to be here.
You've arranged this book alphabetically rather than by food group. Why did you decide to organize it that way?
Well, you know, the whole idea was to give all this really great information and be super accessible, to not actually compromise on the quality of the information. And I think alphabetical was my idea of accessibility.
But it's not an encyclopedia of food.
No.
It only has 50 foods, so it can't include anything like what we can eat.
No. And, you know, people say, well, why 50?
Yeah, why not 100?
Exactly. We sang it out. You know, and there was a moment I was going to do just, I said, would 67, would that somehow work? Is that eccentric enough to work? The short answer is why not 100 foods is that the book would not be written yet because it took me 10 years to write this much. But the longer, maybe I hope, better answer is that there would be way too much repetition. The idea of these 50 is that they're a very balanced group. So, you know, there's lettuce and green beans on one side. There's caviar and chocolate here and pork and ham and bacon and six cheeses and butter and cream. So it is a little bit skewed possibly toward dairy. But I think 50 foods... by extrapolation, you can arrive at a great many more.
But the list does seem somewhat personal and based on a European, mainly French, sensibility.
Absolutely.
Might people from other areas of the world, for example, Asia, Africa, put together a different list?
I think they probably would. Certainly up to a point they would, because there are certain things, well, certain things only grow in certain climates, certain geographical links. But for me, I would say a couple of things. First of all, a book with a point of view seems to me to be a stronger book. And if you wrote simply an encyclopedic book of you know, I don't know, 50 great foods from around the world, it's not a book I really want to read. And I think it's not a book that draws a reader in as much. I wish I knew more about the cuisine of Africa and Asia. Still, many of these foods obviously are pretty much in every continent, you know, the base, the meats and not the cheeses, but a lot of the fruits and vegetables and other things.
And the first on your list, anchovies, which are not on everyone's list of favorite foods because they're so salty. Why do you consider them so important? Other than Caesar salad, what are they good for?
Good, nice question. You know, they're one of the blue fish, as they call them in the Mediterranean, meaning they're oily and they're actually kind of bluish, the luminous blue when they're fresh. Those are some of the most exciting fish of all. They're some of the cheapest fish, so they're some of the most widely eaten, so there's plenty of cuisine to back them up. And for people living inland, it was one of the few, until modern times, it was one of the few kinds of fishes they had, plus salt cod, of course. And it was terribly important to them. And the cured in salt anchovy, because it's full of flavor, and of course it does more than one thing, because as you probably know very well, if you take one from out of the advantage, first of all, to salt as opposed to oil. But all the ones in oil were in salt. They were just taken out and scraped and rubbed and then put into oil and aged in a kind of a negative sense. Whereas if you take them directly from the salt, they have a little more of a fresh fish, fresh from the sea taste. And they're the two things that probably more degrees of gradation, but the two things you can do are to just go for the Caesar salad type experience, or you can put it into, say, the beef, the red wine beef stew, just for that umami underlining.
Well, the other fish on your list are cod and salmon, and here we begin my something I'm going to be doing a lot. Why those two and not tuna, which is probably the fish we consume most of in this country, and the Japanese prize highest, not flounder, swordfish, halibut, or any of a number of other very popular fish varieties.
Yeah, and you could summarize these questions as, what would the 51st food have been? You know, I wanted to say cherries when, you know, that in my mind, that was because I feel I love fruits so much, and a few of them I can grow in my climate, and we can't, we don't have many interesting fish in my climate, way inland in northern Vermont. arguments could be made for any of those fish. And I grew up eating swordfish when it was cheap, and we ate a lot of it.
Tuna.
Tuna was really tempting. I think that was the most tempting one. Part of the reason is the eco side of tuna. I think I backed off a little bit for that reason. I was very, very close to doing tuna instead of salmon, I think it was.
People are going to be even more surprised by shellfish, which are represented oysters raw and crabs blue, but not shrimp or lobster or clams or squid.
I know. We could go on and on with fruits and vegetables. All these points are really well taken. The selection that I made, it was things that I loved and somehow spoke to me. And I, you know, it's possible that if I were planning this book again 5 years from now and I hadn't ever even had the thought before, I might have a very different group.
Well, when we are buying seafood, freshness, of course, is really important. Is it ever okay to buy something that's been frozen?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I mean, the deal with freshness is that if what does fresh mean? To many people, fresh means not having been frozen. And to some people, it means having been frozen but now thawed. If by freshness, though, you mean something that really hasn't been transformed since it was caught, there's a huge argument to be made for frozen. Absolutely.
Because they freeze.
Right there on the boat. And then you're wondering whether it's been through rigor mortis, not to get into unpleasant topics.
Well, I mentioned also wine pairings. And the old rule is that you have whites for fish. Do we have to follow those rules?
You don't have to follow that rule. I think if you're desperately in need of a little support, yeah, sure, white with fish. Their light reds are very adaptable, especially with a fish with a more substantial sauce. I don't know. I had a mushroomy sauce with fish the other night. That you would want a red wine.
A listener has asked, does rigor mortis change the taste of fish?
we need Hal McGee here to really speak to the fine points. But it changes the texture of the fish for sure. Ultra-fresh fish needs time to relax and go through rigor mortis. To go through rigor mortis and then relax. It starts out relaxed. I think what I would say is, my impression is the people who care most about fish these days find that a little bit of evolution makes a more interesting taste.
Now, vegetarians might object to the high percentage of meats on your list. You have beef and veal, lamb and mutton, pork and wild boar, ham and bacon. Well, I do consider bacon to be one of the four basic food groups. But you also have sweetbreads. Aren't many American eaters kind of turned off when they learn that sweetbreads are the squeamish-friendly name given to thymus and pancreas?
Yeah.
So why should we learn to appreciate them, other than they are
delicious?
Well,
I wanted to make more than a nod, or at least a nod, to offal. And I would probably have done brains. But somehow, since the advent of mad cow disease, I thought that was a little further than people wanted to go. And there's also
tripe.
Oh, there is tripe. But tripe is chitlins. There's something to be said for that. I guess I opted for the more refined offal. The two most. I haven't thought about this before. Most refined must be brains and sweetbreads. And there are lots and lots of recipes for them classically. And they have that, like brains, they have that creamy, almost custardy texture. Brains even more so. But it's just a wonderful richness that is that sort of artist, the blank canvas for the artist, so to speak.
And here we are again with wine pairings. Most people say red with meats. Should we drink white wine with meats, or should we follow those other rules, a lighter red like a Pinot Noir with a lighter meat and a Cabernet Sauvignon with a steak?
Yeah, those are not mistaken ideas, but there are, as you probably know, slightly in vogue heavier whites that have undergone macerations on the skins of the grapes, and there are some fairly intense yellow wines and fairly intense orange wines, and there are wines that defy the rules as well as eaters who defy the rules.
I'm going to continue playing the game. Oh, first of all, my guest is Edward Baer. His latest book is 50 Foods, The Essentials of Good Taste, chicken and goose, but not turkey. And then you have lettuce, but not tomatoes. Tomatoes was a big surprise for me.
Well, it's because that was one of the first foods I wrote about, and it seemed so important, and it still is. I just thought I had no more to say about it. I didn't want to re-say what I'd said before, and I thought lots of other people had addressed the topic. So that's my reason for that one.
You do have corn, but it has to be fresh, and you're right that it should be eaten within an hour of picking. Well, that's kind of hard for anybody who lives in the city, even if you go to a green market.
It is true. Well, you know, the corn now, to oversimplify, divides into two kinds, the modern kinds that hold their sugar and the old kinds that taste more corny and have and lose their sugar very rapidly. And that's the 1 hour thing in the old rule about put the pot on to boil and then go out and pick the corn.
You have a lot of greens, which I'm not surprised, artichokes, asparagus, green beans, cabbage, and greens. And that allows you to actually include all sorts of other things in your 50.
Yes.
A bit of a cheat there, but it's okay. And then you have six types of cheese, Camembert, Goat cheese, Gruyere, Munster, Parmesan, Reggiano, and Roquefort. And I was surprised because you're from Vermont, mm-hmm. where cheddar is king, and there are some pretty great cheddars from
Vermont. It's a little bit the tomato answer, I think. I know cheddar so well. When I first did, and I've written about cheddar and written about it in a fair amount of depth, I was so close to it, I realized when I was writing about it, that I didn't know whether it was good or not.
Because you just ate it all.
I've known it all my life. You know, I grew up with a grandfather who went to the country store. He was actually English, but grew up in this country. We went to the country store where it was sitting on the counter and you would get the wedge, and it was the real thing. And that formed my memory, but it's so deep I couldn't even judge it.
Well, that means going to a cheese shop. Should we be buying our
food? No, that meant going to the general store.
In Vermont, that's usually a lot
of
cheese.
England, yes.
Should we be buying our food the way Europeans do, going to the baker, butcher, fishmonger, greengrocer, each separately to buy what we need for that day rather than stocking it for the week at a supermarket?
Yes. And if I have to give a one-word answer, for sure, yes.
You do have buttercream and eggs on your list, but not milk or yogurt. And yogurt is a food that a lot of people swear by.
I think that the argument for cheese over yogurt, and then you'll say, but why cream, why butter? But yogurt is in a way the first step toward cheese. It's the fermentation, it's the souring, and all the complexity comes after. So that's why cheese.
I can't cover everything that you have here. There are mushrooms, there are truffles, caviar, different kinds of breads. But chestnuts and walnuts make the list, not pecans or almonds.
I know. And, you know, people don't know, but wild pecans are so much better than those oversized Georgia ones. you can make those.
What about chestnuts? Because not make them at home. I remember there was a time in New York where every winter all these guys out there selling chestnuts.
You smelled the smoke down the block, and it was a kind of a wonderful ultra New York thing.
And that has pretty much died out.
They were probably old Italians. I don't know. But no, chestnuts to me are unarguable. They're so important to me because they go with certain other foods, especially game. But turkey at this time of year, it's one of those great marriages. They straddle the savory sweet. They're just a wonderful rich flavor.
Dark chocolate also makes your list. What should we be looking for when we're buying chocolate? What do you think of some of the new additions to chocolate, like salt and chilies and bacon?
They're okay. I'm not opposed. I mean, I think the most, for my money, I don't want to be spending my however many dollars a pound for great chocolate for the salt component.
Sea salt,
right? Fancy sea salt or whatever addition. The additions can be wonderful, including salt. What draws me is especially those really fancy little bars that are made from great beans, and they have all kinds of. They have fruit flavors. You don't need to add fruit. They have all kinds of exciting flavors.
But you're right that chocolate destroys most wines.
Yeah, it's true.
Things? Some Europeans match port to chocolate.
No, and
does that work for you?
That makes sense. You need higher alcohol, preferably some sugar, some sweetness in the wine to stand up to the sugar in the chocolate. You also have to stand up to the tannin in the chocolate. You want something that's really concentrated, and Banyuls or Maury, two southern French wines that are kind of syrupy, but they're just terrific with chocolate.
We've pretty much run out of time, but in closing, what's the most important thing for a home cook to keep in mind when we are buying or preparing food?
Well, to rely on your own palate is probably the number one thing. But
they used to say that the best cook in the world is you because you know what you like.
That's kind of it. And it's all about the senses. It's about smelling and touching. It's about the way things look. You know, you want to buy the head of lettuce that looks as if it were still growing in the garden, that if you set it down in the soil, you'd think it belonged there.
Edward Baer is the founder of the very highly esteemed food magazine called The Art of Eating. He's also written for the New York Times, The Atlantic, Forbes, Financial Times, and others. And his latest book is 50 Foods, The Essentials of Good Taste. It's encyclopedic in its own way, even though it isn't an encyclopedia of food, published by the Penguin Press. Thank you so much for being with us again.
A great pleasure. Thank you.